Yuri's struggle for freedom. Most of you have heard my comments on the passing of the great radical and revolutionary leader, Yuri Kochiyama. I had the distinct pleasure of meeting her when I was on death row. She was accompanied by Sister Pam Africa, and the love and admiration between these two women made the room shimmer and shine like morning sunlight. I felt privileged to be in her presence, a living legend, and her support of the black revolutionary leader Malcolm X made it special indeed. Through her, I felt closer to him. Even at an advanced age, I could see Yuri's fire and sense her energy. Her life, her long life in the movement, was one of growth, development, and transition to deeper levels of struggle, to embrace finer levels of the struggle of the oppressed. But we should remember, she wasn't born into the movement. She was born into a middle-class neighborhood and community of mostly white people in San Pedro, where the Japanese neighbors were few and far between. In fact, Yuri would remember that at that time, in the 20s and 30s, she didn't notice racial or ethnic differences. Yuri said, "To me, at that time, it didn't seem like anything unusual for Japanese to be living in a mostly white neighborhood." This was the mind of the young Yuri. This was Yuri, the Nisei, American-born and American-thinking. She remembered years later how many Nisei in San Pedro were ashamed of their Japanese-ness and shunned Japanese cultural expressions in the midst of whites. They tried to emulate their American-ness, but ultimately, of course, to no avail. For as Yuri would explain, Nisei, on the San Pedro side, did not seem as proud of or as aware of our heritage. But more so, it could also have been because we did not wish to emphasize our ethnicity in a society where a wee overdose of Japanese culture may have been thought to be foreign to the larger society. Somehow, I think we negated or denied our Japanese-ness to be on the safe side. I felt Americans liked us in San Pedro because we acted so American, exactly what Americans wanted us to be. We wanted so much to be accepted by America. This was even before the war. I'm glad there was a terminal island where the Japanese people were not afraid to express their Japanese pride. The words of Yuri Kochiyama. On February 19, 1942, it all changed. For on that day, President Franklin Roosevelt signed Executive Order 9066, which authorized the U.S. War Department to establish military zones from which unauthorized persons could be excluded. Now guess who was deemed unauthorized? General John L. DeWitt, Army Commander for the U.S. West Coast, first ordered nighttime curfews for all persons of Japanese ancestry, and soon thereafter, exclusion orders for such people, whether citizen or not. Before long, all but a few Japanese were hauled into American concentration camps, over 110,000 people, most of whom were born in the U.S. and as such American citizens. But it was for naught. General DeWitt put it plain when testifying before a congressional committee, saying, "A Jap's a Jap. It makes no difference whether he is an American citizen or not. I have no confidence in their loyalty whatsoever." And so, among tens of thousands of her fellow caged Japanese citizens was Yuri Kochiyama. She was a young woman, late teens, early 20s, and this experience of life in an American concentration camp would mark her consciousness forever. This was especially so as the incarceration of the West Coast Japanese was based solely on their race. Now, should any doubt this assertion, listen closely to General DeWitt, who, a plain-spoken man, could not be clearer. In support of the internment of all Japanese, DeWitt said, and this is a direct quote, "The Japanese race is an enemy race, and while many second and third generation Japanese born on United States soil, possessed of United States citizenship, have been Americanized, the racial strain are undiluted." racial strain, undiluted. Why? Because a jab's a jab. That kind of thinking, not just of military commanders, but of social, political, and religious elites, justified the illegal detentions of over 100,000 Japanese men, women, and children in U.S. concentration camps for years. When Japanese Americans took to American courts for relief and protection of their constitutional rights, they found cold shoulders at the U.S. Supreme Court. In a case known as Korematsu versus U.S., 1944, American-born citizen Fred Korematsu challenged the U.S. military exclusion order, arguing that as an American citizen, albeit of Japanese descent, he couldn't be constitutionally detained or ordered to move absent due process, a fair hearing, and the like. The court majority disagreed, citing by a vote of 6-3, military necessity was sufficient justification. And Justice Hugo Lafayette Black, writing for the majority, tried to downplay Korematsu's claims of racism, arguing that the exclusion was akin to a curfew, albeit with certain hardships. Here's Black's words. "We uphold the exclusion order as of the time it was made and when the petitioner violated it. In doing so, we are not unmindful of the hardships imposed by it upon a large group of American citizens. But hardships are part of war, and war is an aggregation of hardships. Amazing, but true." As we've noted, three justices dissented. One of them was Frank Murphy. He also spoke plainly, calling the decision, quote, "a legalization of racism." For Yuri, entering her 20s, this was a lesson she learned well. Once she was, or thought she was, a red, white, and blue American girl. The abrupt and racist removal of tens of thousands of Japanese Americans from their homes, farms, businesses, and fishing waters taught her a bitter truth about America that began the process of radicalization and revolutionization that would make Yuri the incandescent person she would become. I think her suffering, both personal and ancestral, opened her up to the suffering of others, especially Black people. She joined civil rights groups and later revolutionary groups like Malcolm's Organization of African American Unity. And while the OAAU was short-lived due to Malcolm's assassination, she would work with other Black organizations as she moved from reform groups to revolutionary formations. She, as did Malcolm, grew deeper and deeper in her commitment to revolutionary politics as a way to transform America from a thoroughly white supremacist, racist, and capitalist state. It would therefore be hard to name a revolutionary group that she didn't support, from the Black Panthers to the BLA, from Sundiata Akoli to Russell Maroon Schultz, from the MOVE organization to this writer. Serious, consistent, loving, supportive, and committed, this was Yuri Kochiyama, mother of six, and part of the movement for freedom for all of us. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.